Inspiring interviews with today's top landlords. This is the Rental Income Podcast. And now, Dan Lane.
Joining me on the podcast today is Eric Miller. And Eric's most recent tenant has been kind of a nightmare. So I want to talk to him today about what went wrong and, more importantly, some of the lessons that he's learned from dealing with this tenant. Hey, Eric, welcome to the show. Why don't we start with you telling us how you got started owning rental properties?
Hey, sure, Dan. Thanks for having me. I really enjoy your show. I started when I was about 30 years old. My wife and I got the idea that if we acquired, assembled about 5 rental properties, and we could use the income from those to pay the others off, pay them all off in about 20 years, and we'd be able to retire at like 50 years old. So that was our sort of plan when we first started buying properties. We ended up buying 2 of them and decided that we didn't really like carrying mortgages like that, even though we were trying to pay them down quickly. So we ended up selling the first place we bought, which has a long backstory itself. And we kept one of the places that we still own. That's in a building. So there's a building management. It makes it a lot easier to manage the place, but paid off the mortgage on that as quickly as we could. And we're just going to keep it and use it as a source of retirement income.
Yeah, that's really a great strategy, because when you have no debt service on a house, it's more profitable. Everything's just a lot easier. So that was actually, I think, pretty smart to sell the first property. Did you have a pretty big gain? Like, did it appreciate a lot?
It didn't. And when I crunched the numbers after I sold it, frankly, we just broke even on the place. But there was a point when I owned the first place that we were willing to take a total loss on it, because the backstory to that place is that it just was infested with snakes, and we could not get rid of the snakes, and we tried everything to get rid of snakes. And wow. Basically people just told us that you'd have to burn the house down and start from scratch. And so, and that wasn't disclosed to us when we bought the place, but we put it up for sale, disclosed it, and some lucky person ended up buying it for, frankly, we just got lucky that two different people decided they wanted it at the same time, and it drove up the price so that we could break even on the place.
Oh, awesome. Okay. All right. So then you live in a different city than where your rental property is.
That's right. We bought our 2 rental properties are and were in Iowa. We used to live in Omaha, Nebraska, and when I was looking for places in Omaha and in Des Moines, Iowa. I was looking for some downtown city type units. And because Des Moines is just a couple hours from Omaha, I included it in the mix and ended up just falling in love with Des Moines. Frankly, it's just a super nice city, very clean, very safe, up and coming, sort of a hipster sort of vibe there, a lot of young professionals. So we went with Des Moines.
Well, were the properties cash flowing better in Des Moines? Like, did the numbers just work better?
None of the numbers worked at all, because I'm one of those. By the way, your intro that talks about top landlords, you may have to switch that up. Everybody should just do the opposite of what I did. But we bought both of the places just right at the tail end of the housing bubble. So we bought them in 2007, 2008. At that point, you're sort of thinking, well, the prices are going to keep going up forever. And one of them was the one that we got rid of was in a small town where they were building an ethanol plant. And there was an ethanol boom at the time, and then that ended up going bust, and the plant got scrapped. And so, just a comedy of errors.
The building, so it's in like a condo building, or it's like an apartment.
The building, again, it was housing bubble time, so the building was being sold as condos. They had just renovated the building, were selling them all off as condos. Bubble burst, and only like 5 or 6 of the units had sold by that point, maybe 10 of the units, and I was one of the buyers. And so the rest of the units, because they couldn't sell them off as condos at that point, they sold to a real estate investment trust who still owns like 120 of the 125 units in the building.
Okay.
So it's really an apartment building I just happened to own one of the apartment. I mean, I call it an apartment now. For a long time, I called it a condo, but it's hard to get around the fact that it's in an apartment building at this point.
And everything has been going fairly smooth until recently, right? You haven't had a lot of problems?
Right, because as I said, Des Moines is just teeming with young professionals, just really high quality of potential tenants. For the first 8 years I had the place, 7 or 8 years, I just had two renters in there, and they were both great, and they both took really good care of it, never had any missed or late rent, nothing, no problems at all until this summer.
So tell us what happened this summer.
So I had the place. My last renter moved out. I did some remodeling of the place, got it, put down new flooring and everything. And then I put the place on Craigslist, and within 8 hours I had 10 people who wanted to live there.
I love hearing that. That's great.
I know. Yeah, it's great. I mean, as bad as I'm going to make Iowa sound right now, it's really, Des Moines is a really great little place to have a place, especially because a lot of the apartments downtown are rent control or income restricted, and my building is not income restricted. Yeah. So as soon as you put it out there, it gets taken. But anyway, so I took the first person who contacted me from my Craigslist ad. I ended up approving her application, and I missed some troubling signs. I mean, it was just a terrible landlording job on my part. First of all, she was not like the last two people I had were, again, young professionals, and she was not a young professional, more middle-ish age. I mean, I don't want to get into too much about her personally, yeah. But she was not like a young professional, not like a college graduate kind of person that was working in the financial industry downtown, which is what a lot of the young people do. But because she applied first, she notified me first, contacted me first, I decided to, she would get priority from me. And her credit history was really bad, and she explained that as she'd just gotten a divorce and that was her ex-husband's fault. And then I also used a new to me online screening tool. And when I looked at her criminal history on that, it looked clean to me. Now I know now that you have to like click down a few times and you get to each individual state and you can check those. And she, if I would have been smart enough to figure that out at the time, she had enough of a rap sheet that I would have never let her in.
Wow.
And So then I also have a building manager in my building who met with her and showed her the place and kind of gave me the thumbs up, like, yeah, she seems pretty good. So I kind of go along with her because she's really good at her job and knows what she's doing.
Now, how are you showing the property from so far away?
Yeah. So I just have a deal with the building manager who works for the company that owns most of the units in the building. And I give her half of the first month's rent to help me get somebody in there.
Okay.
It's our deal.
And so people will contact you off Craigslist, and then you'll set up a time for the building manager to show the property.
I'll just feed them to her. Basically, I'll give them her phone number and email address. Yeah.
Okay.
So it wasn't long after she moved in that I started getting emails from the building manager saying, I think she's going to be trouble. You're probably going to have some problems with her, and saying that she was hanging around with a bad crowd, but she wasn't really more specific than that, even though at this point I know that she knew that she was up to no good. Specifically, she was, well, I'll get to that, but so about a month and a half into her tenancy, I got an email from the building manager that someone had broke in to the building. Our building is secured, it's locked pin entry. And he took something and broke through the front window, did a bunch of damage to common areas, and then went up to my apartment, tried to kick in the door. So that was disturbing. By that time, my tenant was late on rent. She had paid the first month and paid the deposit, but she hadn't paid since then. So she was behind, And I've been working on with her to try and help her get caught up, because I'm just, I kind of always look at it like, well, as a individual landlord, I have that sort of flexibility to help, you know, to work with people if they're having a bad month or something. But because this happened and it looked like somebody tried to break into our apartment, and my building manager was telling me that it was one of her associates, you know, somebody that she knew or dealt with, I went ahead and told her that she needed to leave, because of the break-in, that I wasn't going to work with her anymore, that she was going to get evicted at that point.
And how long had she been in the property for?
She had been there maybe about a month and a half.
Okay.
At that point. So not too long. She was, again, she was just, it may have been a little more than a month and a half, because she was, I think, a few weeks late on her rent at that point.
Okay.
But again, thankfully, she was a few weeks late on her rent. So I ended up hiring a lawyer then to start to evict her. And he came back to me a few days later and after talking to several sources, and told me that she was working as a prostitute from my apartment. Wow. And the break-in was a result of a jealous customer or some angry John or something like that. So, wow. I just want to mention too that she was never like charged with prostitution or anything. These are just allegations, but I heard enough stories from enough people, like reputable people at this point, that I'm pretty certain of it.
Okay.
So, and also one thing I did after my lawyer told me this was I Googled her phone number, and the first couple pages of Google results are escort services.
Oh, wow.
And escort firms.
Yeah, there's no doubt that she was up to no good there.
No. And in fact, you know, I heard stories from people that worked in the building saying that her handler or her pimp really would just basically stand by that secure door all day or all evening and let these guys in to go up for an hour, and then he would let them back out. And there were some comical stories about people like standing outside with bags of quarters and stuff.
So, wow.
So, but you know, as I was glad to hear that at least I had a good story to come out of this, but
yeah.
The residents in the building at this point were literally just scared with her there. And I kept getting reports that she was continuing to behave badly. She was, I guess, running through the halls naked and throwing up in the lobby. And she was intoxicated all the time. Her pimp was still hanging around too. So at that point, I decided that the eviction process, while a good backup, I needed to get her out. I need to try to get her out right away. And I had a few reasons for wanting to sort of get her out on my own and not wait for the eviction to play out. One reason was that I was under a lot of pressure from the building and residents to remove her because of the threat that she was, or her cohorts were posing to people. I mean, remember what precipitated all this was somebody broke into the building and from what we can tell, went up to try and kill her or something, because I mean, one thing I had to do was had to order a new door for my apartment because it split down the middle where he tried to try to kick it in. So I also wanted to get her out because I thought that would, you know, get her out on my own, because I thought that waiting for the eviction to play out may give her or her handlers a reason to destroy my apartment, which I, again, had just put a bunch of money into remodeling it right before she moved in. I was also afraid because I was evicting her on non-payment, I was afraid that she might scrounge up enough money to put off the eviction or, you know, kill the eviction. And then until she couldn't pay again, then I would have to go through the whole process
right
all over again.
And you just want her out of there. I mean,
exactly, you know. Exactly. And then I would say the last thing was a little bit more altruistic, where I did feel somewhat bad for her. I mean, she's just really in a bad place, and I didn't want her to be homeless or kicked out on the street either. I mean, she's got a lot of problems in her life, and I just didn't really want to pile on. So I sort of set out to move her more gracefully than the eviction. Although, again, the eviction is still playing out the whole time in the background, and I'm using that really as a motivator for her to try and get her to go. So a couple weeks, 2 or 3 weeks passed after this break-in, and she kept telling me, well, I'm going to be out in a couple days. And then a couple days later, she'd call and say, I can't do it. And she'd always have an excuse. She's going to be out in a couple days. And that just turned into weeks and weeks. So finally, she called me one time and said, hey, I've got a place, but I can't afford the payment to get in there. Well, at that point, I just wanted her out. I mean, the whole time I wanted her out, but I looked at that as an opportunity to get her out. So I currently live in St. Louis, but I drove up to Des Moines. I lived in hotels for a few days, four or five days, while I worked to sort of coax her out of the building. Part of that was I met this shady guy in a parking lot of a grocery store and paid him $1,000 cash out of the back of my trunk. And under the auspices that I was paying her, I was paying her deposit on this place that she was going to sublease.
Now, with giving her the money before she's out of the place, yeah, was it ever going through your mind that?
Total calculated risk. And it was one of those things. It was one of those, like, the whole thing was risky. I mean, literally, as I walked up on this guy's car, literally, like, snapped a shot of his license and sent it to my wife before I approached him, because in case I ended up missing or something, because I didn't know what kind of shady business I was getting into there.
Sure.
And in hindsight, I mean, even at the time, I kind of figured out eventually that she was probably in on this with this guy to just extract $1,000 from me, which is what I paid for this deposit.
Yeah.
But you know, on some level, like, I'm a sucker for doing this, but at the same time, I feel like, well, in the end, it ended up working, and I do feel like it bought me a little bit of protection, because this guy ended up being there when I was getting her moved out, and he was not a pleasant fellow. And I felt like the fact that I had just given him $1,000 in 20s kind of softened him and made him not beat me up or kill me.
Right, right. So how long was it after you gave him the $1,000 that she moved out?
So it was actually the next day. And okay, what I'd done is it was set. I told her, I said, okay, I took care of your sublease. I gave this guy the money. And so tomorrow morning, I've got a moving truck that's coming over. So she said, okay. But then, of course, I mean, I kind of knew this was going to happen. That next morning, she called me and said, I can't do it. My back hurts. I have to go to work. I can't do the move. Can we do it in a couple of days? And, you know, of course, I'm living in hotels. It's costing me a lot of money. I'm having to take off from work, my real job. So I said, no, this is your last chance. You either work with me today, or you can just start working with my lawyer and the sheriff's department, because I'm just spending way too much time and effort, money, trying to get this done. And it's only worth it if it gets done at that point.
Right.
It was all that, you know, like you said, that $1,000 could have just gone into the ether.
Right.
If I didn't sort of push it. So, but she said, no, I can't do it. So I started driving home, and I felt horrible. And then thankfully, as I was driving, she caved and called me and said, okay, we'll do it. I think she kind of realized that, hey, I'm going to get put out, and it's better if this sucker wants to pay for my move, I'll just let him do it,
right,
which I was happy to do. And it cost me $500 for the moving truck and the guys boxed her stuff up for and everything. So then the moving truck eventually got there, got her stuff all moved. Boy, I was standing like a block away, watching and sort of talking to my wife on the phone, telling her, hey, they just moved her bed down. It's really happening, because we were so thankful.
Yeah.
But then after the moving truck left, you know, I paid them, and I went up and asked her, can I come into the apartment? and went in. And when I met her, it was the first time I'd met her in person, and it was just extremely evident that she was a hardcore drug user, which I'm sure she didn't set out to do the prostitution thing. I'm sure the prostitution thing was a means to an end for her to make money for her next fix. And it's also why I don't think I would have ever seen another penny of rent, because I just think that all her money must have been going into getting loaded. Yeah. And so,
what kind of condition was the apartment in when you got up there?
So that's what makes the spending the money, to me, in my mind, worthwhile, as the apartment was in really good condition. Aside from stinking like smoke, it's a no smoking building, but she could clearly smoke the whole time she was there.
Yeah.
But that's about it. I mean, I spent the next, after I got her out, I spent the next couple of days cleaning and doing minor fixes, you know, painting or doing some patches and painting a little bit. And basically the place was good as new. And within a few days I had another renter ready to move in.
Oh, that's great. What about getting the smoke smell out? Was that difficult?
So the building management there has an osmosis machine, and they can stick them in, just for that very reason. They can stick them in there for a few days, and it just, it really helps get it cleaned up. Now, if that, our my plan was, if that machine didn't work, then I would just have to completely repaint the interior, which I was prepared to do, but the you know, my person there tells me it smells fine. So
great.
And apparently it didn't bother the next renter.
So let's talk about the lessons that you learned from doing this. So I guess the first one is, with the criminal check, make sure that you scroll down on the website to make sure you're seeing the whole criminal background check.
Yeah, if you're not overly familiar with the software you're using, you better spend a half hour making sure you clicked all the buttons.
Okay.
That's one change I've made, is I'm letting the building management do the screening with their software.
Okay.
And since they use it, you know, five times a day to screen people, they did my next person, and I'm confident that they would catch anything like that. So I'm not too worried about that anymore, but definitely need to do that.
What about verifying employment? Like, would that have helped you?
I did do that. And I even called and talked to her boss and asked. And so that's the thing. She worked too. This whole hooker thing was a side gig to make extra cash.
Okay.
But she had an actual job, although what it looks like now, so it looks like she's had several jobs since she moved in. So it looks like she just bounces from job to job. But at the time when I called her boss, they said, nope, she works here. There's no plans on getting rid of her. And here's how much she makes. And the amount that they said she made would have been well enough to cover the rent, but she just could never come up with it because she was, I don't know what she was doing with it, but I'm sure it was going into the drug trade. Right. I mean, I just have a feeling it was. But
is there anything else that you would do differently, or anything else that you've learned? Because it seems like you were doing a lot of the right things.
So I would, one thing that makes us uneasy is I would have had a PO box on my lease. I had my home address for rent checks to be mailed to. Now, I prefer PayPal for rent because it's just so much easier. But if somebody wants to mail me something, I do have my home address on there, which is discomforting, knowing that piece of paper may be floating around with her and her cohorts still. So I would get a PO box. In fact, I've already gone down to my local post office and asked them how much it was, and it was only like $60 a year.
Yeah,
or something.
It's pretty cheap.
Yeah, it's totally worth it to keep them from getting your home address. If there's any doubt in a tenant, deny their application. You know, it's worth waiting a couple weeks for a better applicant to come along. Here's another thing that happened. Once I got my lease to the lawyer to do the eviction, they said, "Oh yeah, I had stipulated like $10 a day late payment fee up to and not to exceed $40 per month. So that was the law in Iowa when I wrote my lease 8 years ago, but that law has changed. So I would rewrite the lease every couple of years based on just because you don't know what laws right. are changing and what rules are changing in your state. Yeah. So that's
an important thing to stay on top of because laws do change from time to time. So make sure that you're staying up on your laws or that you're redoing leases. Yeah.
Right. And it's a tough thing to do, especially if you're, like I had a tenant for 4 years in there. You just don't.
Right.
You're not, it's not like I'm studying.
Right. Exactly.
Real estate law.
Right.
So that's definitely something I would do differently. And this time, again, I just let the building management use their lease because I know they're on top of it.
Well, Erica, I'm sorry to hear this happen to you, but I think that we all learned a lot from hearing your story. And, And I wish you the best with your new tenant.
Thanks a lot, Dan. It's been really fun to be here.
Before I get out of here, I just want to give you a quick update about the podcast. I'm going to be taking a few weeks off over the holiday season, kind of shutting down production for a little bit. But I will be back to kick off the new winter season of the podcast starting on Tuesday, January 12th. Thank you so much for listening. I really appreciate all your support, and I'll talk to you in January.